Welcome to Let's Talk Real Estate. I'm your host, Anna Olsisi, serial entrepreneur, passionate marketer, and owner at Segue Group. On the podcast, you will find valuable information about all things real estate, plus some fun stories told by a variety of guests. So if you like what you hear, then subscribe and invite any friends who you think may get some value from listening. Everybody to this week's episode. This week we have someone in an industry that we really haven't touched on before, which is commercial mortgage lending. So today we have commercial mortgage broker Jake Clopton, who is the owner of Clopton Capital. It operates nationwide, focusing on private investors, small to middle market real estate entities, and they invest in commercial, industrial, multifamily real estate. And so I'll let Jake really give you a real introduction about Jake. Thank you so much for coming. Thanks for reaching out to us. We're excited to have you here today.
Absolutely. Thanks, Anna. And thanks so much. And yeah, I'm Jake Clopton. I'm the president of Clopton Capital. I started this company about 12 years ago, and we focus in the $1 to $50 million kind of financing size space for all commercial real estate asset types, from multifamily and industrial. We do a lot of hotels, self-storage, stuff like that. And we do debt, so we do loans like permanent loans, bridge, construction, and then we're also very active in the higher cap stack space like joint venture equity and preferred equity, stuff like that. So thanks so much. I'm happy to be on here.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for taking time to chat with us about this. Okay, so we're just going to dive right into the obvious question is how COVID has affected the commercial real estate market. And we can break that down by types of commercial real estate from retail, which I know it's affected a lot, to maybe multifamily, which might have had a positive impact depending on whether or not tenants are defaulting or, you know, whatever. So tell me a little bit about how it's done.
Yeah, I mean, I think the effects of COVID, you know, are very sector specific, right? So you mentioned retail and, you know, I'll throw hospitality into that mix. Obviously, those two industries just struggle significantly, right? I mean, but also in the same respect, another thing COVID did was introduce a lot of stimulus into the economy. So, you know, let's say as far as hospitality, you know, a lot of hotel owners have really been able to hang on because of all the incentives like the PPP loans and, you know, emergency disaster loans and stuff like that. So, you know, I mean, we're starting to see those guys kind of crawl out of, you know, the dip. Retail, you know, the biggest problem we saw with retail was that like COVID was really a trend accelerator, right? So we're all already seeing the move to, you know, online and your virtual shopping and all this stuff. And obviously just COVID just exacerbated that, you know, faster than you thought was going to happen. But, you know, at the same time, again, you know, the pandemic, you know, introduced a lot of stimulus in the system, and a lot of those retailers that were having trouble before, you know, all of a sudden saw lots of liquidity and, you know, lower interest rates and stuff like that. So some of the guys that were actually able to access capital that maybe would have been too expensive before. But, you know, and we've seen some retail traffic start to come back, but, you know, I think that trend will continue to accelerate. Multifamily, you know, one of the things we did see is, you know, a lot of like renters get behind. But we're starting to see that, you know, alleviate as, you know, not only as jobs are coming back and incomes are going up, but also, you know, there's all these rent relief programs that are slowly filtering their way through the system and, you know, helping out landlords in that respect. So I would say overall, generally speaking, you know, the trend is upward for pretty much all different sectors of real estate, but it was a little difficult there for a while.
Yeah. I can imagine. So, you know, you're right now in Chicago, but you do work nationwide. And so, for example, Florida, which is where we are, that has actually been stimulated tremendously because of COVID. Our economy actually is going really strong right now because everybody's coming over here. So what areas of the country are you seeing tremendous growth in? And are those then, you know, being where you're actually focusing on in terms of your lending?
Sure. I mean, we, as far as focus, right, I mean, what we really look for is like good economics and good properties and good borrowers, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, and that thesis tends to, you know, follow whatever is going on in, you know, macro in the economy and demographic population shifts. So, you know, in Florida, I think had, you know, again, as an example of like a, you know, the pandemic being a trend accelerator, I think Florida was already on the way up, you know, like other, you know, Sunbelt states, you know, Texas, Arizona, places like that. And, but, you know, the pandemic just pushed it forward so much more, right?
Right.
You know, people were moving out of the north and the city, you know, in those kind of cities because they're, well, not only the pandemic, but there was also the riots happening. Another thing that, for instance, in Chicago that has happened since pandemic is property taxes around here shot way up, right? Because local, you know, municipalities are having bigger budget deficits and they have to fund those some way, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people are moving, you know, want to move away and get to, you know, a warmer climate, less property taxes, you know, maybe, you know, lots of various reasons. So we are doing a lot of business in, you know, Florida, Texas, areas like that. They're seeing lots of growth. And it's probably going to continue.
Okay. Yeah. Well, good. Good for us. Now, in terms of, we touched on sectors. And so I did say multifamily and some other things, but how about things like medical facilities and all that with the population aging and all that? Are we seeing more loans for things like medical facilities versus, I don't know, daycares or something like that? I mean, do you deal with things even that small in terms of, well, I mean, daycares can be big because they can be chains. So tell me.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so shockingly, the demand and growth in daycares is pretty big, actually.
Oh.
I mean, the daycares have been, you know, a product type that, you know, is definitely something that people are interested in and putting out money for.
Okay.
As far as like, you know, medical, you know, anything that's along the lines of like, aging population trends, right? Like assisted living facilities, you know, like outpatient medical care, like Fresenius, you know, those types of centers. Yeah, those are definitely going to do well. During the pandemic, you know, it got a little difficult to finance assisted living facilities, right? Because you didn't know what was going to happen, right? I mean, if you got a COVID outbreak at a nursing home, you know, I mean, that was not gonna be good, right? And I think a lot of the, you know, the concern there was like, what's the liability, right? If you have a COVID outbreak in a nursing home, are you just gonna end up with 400 lawsuits? I don't know, maybe. I mean, maybe that still happens, right? But you know, generally speaking, like, you know, so there's definitely money that is chasing, you know, anything medical, especially anything medical that's going along with, you know, the demographic trends, you know, of aging populations and what's going on.
Mm-hmm. How about things like co-working space now that people, you know, the consumer behavior is changing and consumer opinions changing toward how they work, you know, where they work.
Right. Interesting you bring up the co-working space, right? So our offices were actually in Regis space before all this started, and then it just got shut down. And, you know, I've had a couple meetings in Regis space recently, which I guess is a close parallel, right, to co-working space. You know, I'm not sure that the, you know, I mean, I don't want to talk about it, but I'm not sure the advantages that were there before are here now because they have to adhere to very strict, you know, social distancing guidelines. You got to wear the mask in the whole time and all this stuff. You know, and I've read some stuff that, like, you know, the benefits of the co-working space are just not there yet because, you know, this, we're just not there societally yet, right? I mean, we still have all the risks, we still have all the social distancing stuff you got to do. I think as that starts to go away, you know, the co-working stuff will be more attractive for people to go and get involved in. But I don't know. I mean, there's these companies like WeWork, you know, I see that their, you know, vacancies are still pretty high. It may be a lasting impact on them. I think eventually they'll come back, but there may be some hesitancy going forward.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's probably dictated also by the fact that WeWork is in these major areas, major metropolitan areas that are losing people versus the smaller or mid-sized cities like ours where, you know, more people are coming over here, you know, all the time. So are you seeing an increase in commercial investing in the mid-sized cities versus, you know, the more suburban areas versus the bigger cities?
Yes. As far as like downtown areas, I think are still going to have challenges, right? So I think a lot of people have gotten used to smaller markets. And, you know, before when you thought you had to be downtown, maybe now you don't, right? I was actually just reading something, a little bit earlier about how, the largest, small metro area multifamily construction is gaining more ground than any other large metro and stuff like that. So, the housing tends to follow jobs and, where people are moving. So, I think there, ultimately some of that will stick around. That being said, I think suburban office, outside of business district downtown areas is actually probably, a good play because you've got people that moved out of downtown and, like primary market downtown areas and into the suburbs, but still want to be close to the city. And maybe they just need, single office space or, small office space in suburban areas. So that might be an interesting play. But yeah, I think, the trend towards ultra small markets may revert a little bit and come back to, suburban, large metro.
Right. Well, it's interesting that you bring up the multifamily development, because what's happening, at least in our market right now, is that I never would have predicted that it would have actually taken off the way it's taken off. But because of housing being just the inventory is so low, I mean, in the country in general, but, in certain areas in particular, and with construction prices then increasing so much and construction being so slow, these multifamily developments are definitely becoming very, very popular. And they're actually all like full, which really surprises me, especially like the luxury ones, which just, it never occurred to me that that would actually be a thing. But I guess, it's been fueled by all, supply chain issues and all of that that's really impacting construction. But the ones that I've seen go up are definitely bigger than, what you would typically lend, because you say you do 1 to 50 million would be like your average. Now, do you work with any national, like people who have multiple locations throughout the nation and throughout cities, or what's your typical client?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So our typical guy is going to depend on what the product is we're doing, right? 1 to 50 million is really like our range. We've done larger than that, right? But I'd say most of our action happens in that space. Our typical clients on the debt side are going to be like small to middle market, real estate companies and private investors, right? I mean, if you get down to like a couple million bucks, you're probably a private investor. That being said, I've had some guys that were kind of, they were doozies, right? And they'll have a $40 million loan. It's just some guy. On the joint venture equity side, we tend to deal with, much larger companies because, the equity slice can be of a much larger project, can be, smaller in comparison. And, usually those guys have their loans figured out. So we end up arranging, partnerships on the equity side for them. For instance, like $40 million worth of equity, that's a pretty large project, right? Those clients tend to be, mid to large scale real estate companies that are doing those types of deals.
Definitely. 40 million is nothing, to scoff at. It wouldn't be for the average. Average Joe or Jane who wants to get into real estate investing. So I guess we can touch on that, because a lot of the people who do listen to the podcast aren't necessarily big time real estate investors, but they have been, toying with the idea of investing. We do get a lot of requests for investors. Usually it's mostly, like people who want to buy just like a single family property or whatever, but every now and then we get bigger investors. And given how expensive everything is nowadays, but with the shift in the commercial side, how would someone who wants to get into it, what would you suggest they do? What would the next steps be?
Sure. I mean, so most people I see that are coming into the commercial real estate space, they're either buying real estate that's attached to a business, right? Like a gas station or something like that. Or if it's on the investment real estate side, they're usually not just randomly buying a retail center, right? They're usually going from, buying single family homes and then making the step to buying commercial multifamily, which would be 5 units and up, right? And that's just kind of like the next iteration in their, evolution of investing in habitational real estate. The biggest, kind of like hurdle I see a lot of people doing that, have to jump over is understanding the difference between residential lending and commercial lending, right? Because when you're doing these, single family home investment properties, you can still get the residential Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, whatever it is, loans for some of these things, right? Where it's like a a 30-year fixed rate at some crazy low, ridiculous rate, and it doesn't balloon and all that stuff, right? You know, when you get in the commercial space, it's totally different. Residential lending tends to go from the person down to the property, right, as far as underwriting, whereas commercial is backwards. It goes from the property to the person, right? And, you know, commercial loans are just structured differently. They balloon versus, you know, residential ones. They really don't. So there is a little bit of a learning curve there. But for people that want to get involved in, you know, let's say they're stepping up from residential to commercial, I think that's going to be the biggest learning curve. And you know, understanding that there's no pre-approvals, right? You got to go out and get your property and then get your loan. So, you know, I mean, there are a couple of things you got to understand. But as far as, like, additional capital requirements and stuff like that, a lot of times it's not too much more than some of the, you know, residential investment properties that are done, right? I mean, you can buy a five-unit building, you know, in the right market for $400,000, right? And there's certainly more than enough houses that cost that. So I don't think the leap is too extraordinary. And, you know, once you get to a certain point, you got to start raising investor money, right? Unless you just got millions of dollars to plop down. But that happens a lot faster than, you know, you realize.
Yeah. I mean, when you say, you know, something like a $400,000 multifamily investment property, you know, that's not typical, at least, you know, not here, for example, at least, you know, in the places that are
right.
Most likely to fetch high rents. So do you work with a lot of people who do like these lower income areas, and then, you know, you just identify like what the ROI is going to potentially be on the property, and then they come back to you and tell you, well, you know, this is what we're predicting, but is it a safe investment? I mean, I don't know.
I think it depends on, you know, really like who the borrower is and like how much they mm-hmm. understand about what they're getting involved in, right? I mean, I would tell you if you're going to go off of the cap rate that, you know, whatever real estate broker has put on your investment and that's your plan on getting, you're probably going to get your heart broken.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Right. For some reason, it just doesn't seem to work out that way. Right. But I mean, like personally, like we you know, I personally invest in multifamily properties around Chicago. And, you know, you do, in Chicago and areas like this, you do get a lot of like smaller buildings. We picked up, you know, some properties in lower income areas, and they worked out extremely well, right? I mean, we mitigate a lot of the risk concerns that I think everybody's thinking of when, you know, you look at those properties. But I think, you know, just if you're going to look in those areas, you should understand, you know, you can't just chase a cap rate, right? You really got to understand the neighborhood and what block it's on, right? Because it's not like buying a property in a high income area where it's just going to be okay. You really got to understand the asset and then what the surrounding neighborhood is like, and maybe sit on the street corner for a couple hours when it's light up and see what's going on. Yeah. The other issue I think with, you know, a lot of real estate investors is, you know, when it comes to multifamily, is really management, right? I think, you know, managing a single family home, almost anybody can do that. I mean, I live in one. I manage this house, right? It's not too difficult. But when you're managing an apartment building, you know, there's a lot more stuff that you really need to do, and it's a lot more hands-on. And having the proper manager company is really going to get you to where you need to go. And I think some people try to avoid that and not pay management fees, and I think that's a mistake.
Definitely imagine that that's a huge mistake, because I don't know. I don't know how you do it all by yourself, really. And especially if you're not even living in the same city, which would just be nuts. But
right. Unless you want to be going fixing toilets
exactly.
and boilers, you know, on Saturdays.
Exactly.
You know.
Exactly. It's funny that you say boilers, because we would never say that here. We're like the air conditioning. That's the big thing here. Yeah. Yeah. So how about things? And this is just speaking, you know, because this is where we are, is places like college towns where the college may have affected. Or, well, the current situation in the colleges may have affected a lot of these multi-family or, you know, multiple unit investment properties. Have you seen any shift there, or anybody kind of defaulting on stuff because of that?
I assume you're talking about stuff specifically geared towards like student housing, stuff like that. I mean, I think there is, you know, some pain there, right? You know, obviously, I think a lot of students, and I don't have the data on this, but I've heard, and I feel like a lot of students just took a semester off, or, you know, they're going to do Zoom learning. Why the why do they have to hang out in some small college town in the middle of nowhere, right? You know, they either stayed at home or didn't pay, you know, didn't want to pay their rent or what have you. I think that'll reverse, right? I mean, kids will start going back to college, and, you know, I know they're mandating vaccines, but they've been mandating the meningitis shot forever to go to college, right? So, I mean, I think they'll go back, and, you know, and those, you know, those dorms and those student housing facilities will end up getting filled again. One thing the pandemic did do is, you know, in commercial real estate, has this way of always kind of like repurposing, you know, assets from one thing to another. And one thing I am seeing in some markets is, you know, like for instance, working on a student housing building right now in North Carolina, and the guy just, you know, he changed it, said, okay, well, student housing is overbuilt and not working. He completely switched it over to multifamily. And now it's completely workforce housing, right? There's a serious lack of workforce housing everywhere. So they flipped it over to workforce, and now it's completely full with, you know, higher rents than they would have gotten with students. So I'm not sure every property can do that, right? Because some are really geared towards
student housing. Well, I'd say that, you know, well, student housing, two things have happened. Like, first, the fall semester, it fell, like, significantly. And then when all the kids realized that they hated being at home and the parents agreed with them, then they came in the spring. So we saw a giant influx in the spring here. Yeah, so hopefully that will make a significant recovery, and not just because we're in Florida, but probably in, you know, in all of the other college towns, or even just towns in general, cities in general that have big colleges. So hopefully that will turn. How about companies or investors that invest in like Airbnb properties, because oftentimes they have like portfolios where it's not just like one Airbnb property. Do you work with that? Do you do any of that?
We do and we don't, right? So our minimum lot size is like $1 million. And some of those Airbnb properties, you know, we see kind of like flying under the radar of that. I think the Airbnb stuff is really interesting, but you know, the some of the challenge I see with some of the Airbnb investors is they like to apply multifamily cap rates to short-term rental income, and it just doesn't work that way, right? I mean, it's not going to appraise for higher. I mean, it's the real estate is still the real estate, and the Airbnb aspect of it, you know, the extra juice is a business, right? It's just like a hotel, right? There's a business aspect of a hotel versus the real estate. So that's some of like, you know, the I guess like disparity between what, you know, the way that I look at Airbnb properties versus what some other people look at them. You know, we certainly see them. The way that I've seen them typically financed is it's like, there's no, I would tell you if somebody came to you and say, hey, what programs do you have for Airbnb? Right. They don't, there's nobody that's out there that's saying, all I do is finance Airbnb. It's always create the market, find a bank, find a lender that's going to do it. And then, you know, kind of present the best options, because that's really how they're all handled, right? The vast majority of them are just financed with local banks. And so in some of the concern is, you know, when you're, if it's a guy that's, you know, he's just has the idea that doing an Airbnb would be, you know, a phenomenal idea. There may be, you know, a little bit of a learning curve for the first one or second one, right? Versus like how it's going to perform.
Yeah, the reason I was asking is because, there is an investor here in town who owned multiple, and she owned like most of the building actually, but it was a whole portfolio. So I didn't, you know, and then, you know, so what's the risk mitigation there? You know, like we're a huge medical town in addition to college. So we have all these visiting nurses and doctors, you know, looking for the short-term rentals, not necessarily like Airbnb, like a week or something like that, but definitely 3 months at a time. So I didn't know if that was something that, you know, it was just a little bit too risky to take on.
I think it depends. Yeah, I mean, I think the Airbnb stuff, it is like very much so has a business aspect of it to it. And just like any business, it really depends on who the person is that's running it. I mean, what I'm starting to see is a lot of Airbnb operations are really run by a company now and not just like a guy, right? I mean, yeah, there's enough guys that are just renting out their like summer home, right, on Airbnb. But I mean, yeah, we're starting to see the, you know, some consolidation in the space. And then, you know, like some of these are really becoming operating companies. And then it's a different level, right? I mean, that's certainly a different risk profile than just like a guy that's got one or two Airbnbs.
And then two more things, you know, two more types of properties that I thought would be, you know, interesting to talk about, which would be the mobile home financing or mobile home park. Are you seeing an increase in those due to just the state? And this is not necessarily just because of COVID, but just because of shifts in the population. And when you say mobile home, is this just like stationary mobile homes or are these just like RV parks?
Right. So that, yeah, good point. Definitely a big difference between the RV parks and then like, yeah, the mobile homes, which are really just manufactured homes. And the only time they're really mobile is when they're being brought in. Right. Yeah. But no, yeah, they're still called mobile homes. So we do a lot of manufactured housing communities, mobile home parks. Right. And, you know, I think anything that kind of goes along the lines of affordable housing is definitely going to work out well. Right. I mean, there's not only that, like there's a huge push, you know, by government agencies and just, you know, the federal government in general for affordable housing, because there's really a lack of it, right? You have a lot of money in like HAP contract and subsidized like super low income housing, and then you have a lot of luxury housing, but the affordable workforce housing space, I think, is really underserved and it's hard to find. And manufactured housing, I think, you know, also fits into that.
Right.
Also, I think it's a demographic trend too, right? I mean, a lot of people retire into manufactured housing communities, and a lot of these are really nice, right? I mean, you think like mobile home parks, you think like, oh my God, you know? No, a lot of them are very nice, actually. We've seen, I'm seeing in this space a lot of money moving into that space. Not only just private investors, but also institutional capital trying to come in. And, you know, I think they're, you can traditionally find some higher cap rates, you know, in that space. You know, I get calls pretty consistently from guys out of New York City wanting to buy mobile home parks in like Alabama. I'm like, okay, sure, yeah, because they're like, I've never seen an 8 cap before, you know. So yeah, no, it's interesting. It's definitely a an interesting space right now. The RV space, the RV park space, again, that's got a little bit more of a business aspect to it, right? Because it's more along the lines of like leisure travel.
Right. You know, it's just homes, about the property itself, you know, where they roll into.
Yeah.
And so yeah, financing that anyway.
Yeah, so I mean, we definitely look at a lot of those too. It's got a little bit more of a business aspect to it. It's a little bit different profile, but yeah, those are done really, really well during the pandemic.
Yes, I did.
I don't know if you saw RV sales.
Think that also goes hand in hand with the aging population. So as people become, you know, empty nesters and all that, they want to go off and see the world, and maybe this has just fueled that. No pun intended. Yeah. And then self storage, I thought was really interesting.
For sure.
Because you do deal in that, you know, as well. And has that increased or decreased with a shift of people going off into the suburbs?
So storage was strong before the pandemic. And, you know, I think anytime you have people moving, you get good demand in storage, right? I mean, you just have stuff you don't want to get rid of, and you're like, whatever, I'll put it in storage until I forget that I own it in 3 years, and then some guy auctions it, right? Storage is still doing great, and I have really yet to find a single market that storage wasn't doing at least okay in. One thing that's really happening in the storage space right now is you've got a lot of long-term owners that some of them are disposing their assets or moving on, you know, and you've got guys coming in and trying to consolidate that space and, you know, build up portfolios of storage. I think there's probably a lot of, you know, upward movement in storage over the next couple of years, and had been, you know, over the past couple.
Yeah, I just didn't know as people upsized, you know, in terms of their houses, if they were storing less stuff, but they're just accumulating more crap, basically, is what's happening.
You know, I think a lot of people upsize houses, and, I think a lot of people
Home
their parents. So, yeah, the guys that I've seen in the storage space are doing okay. Right?
Yeah. Well, good. Fantastic. So are you, I mean, we talked about sectors. Are there any specific cities that you like to focus on or that you have focused on?
Not specific focus, really. We've been around for a really long time. We've got a big reach. So, you know, deals tend to find their way to us, you know, and it tends to ebb and flow, like, based on what's going on in the economy. And the stuff that we're doing right now, we're doing a lot in Florida, we're doing a lot in Texas, you know, but it's the areas you would expect, right? We always consistently get business in, you know, just sporadically throughout, you know, the rest of the U.S. But the areas that are experiencing high growth and high demand, you know, we tend to get an influx of a lot of stuff. So the area like your area in Florida, right, and in other areas that are experiencing high growth, we're just seeing lots of business from there. For me, I'm certainly not, you know, like nixing any markets at all. It's just, you know, all we really need is good economics of a property, and, you know, we can get involved.
Yeah, for sure. And in areas that have low taxes, then I'm sure they're growing in addition to everything. They're growing, you know, in commercial in that realm as well. So,
yeah, it makes it easier to underwrite it, you know, like when you're looking at a property in Chicago and you're like, all right, well, are they going to triple next year? Or, oh, maybe, yeah. So.
Right, exactly, which is crazy. So going back to economics, so you started in 2008. Was that was interesting, right? Because things were like, it was the tipping point right then and there, you know, or maybe it had already tipped. So what was the catalyst there? What made you think, well, this is it. This is what I want to do.
Right. So before I started this, I traded futures. I was trading like interest rate futures, like LIBOR, that kind of stuff. So I had kind of a banking background with that. So 2009-8 area, right? That was different. That was like a liquidity banking crisis, right? Which is what we didn't have now. Like, there's probably too much money out there right now. So So really, you know, there was two things. One, I was tired of working from 1 a.m. to 4 p.m. every day, so I felt like I needed a different gig. you know, I was very pale. And two, you know, there was this liquidity crisis where people were having trouble finding capital, right? And that's what we do. I mean, we're an intermediary between brokers and capital sources. So really at the time, you know, I didn't have a background in originating loans. I really just started making phone calls and, you know, building relationships with lenders and capital sources. And right. I mean, at the time, if you just said you had money, people just came to you, right? Because everybody was dry, right? So they needed funding somehow. So that's really how I started. And, you know, and at that time, you know, we were doing all kinds of different stuff, right? We were doing businesses, and I financed the pools of semi-trucks at one point. But it really quickly kind of, you know, evolved into strictly commercial real estate. Because I think, you know, I just liked real estate. I was drawn to it. And, you know, it's just grown into where we are today.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's neat. Yes, I can see the 1 a.m. to 4 p.m. situation not being really conducive to really anything.
It's hard to have a life.
It is hard to have a life for sure. So definitely, you know, you've been successful. You've continued to grow. How is business? Have you grown significantly in the last few years? Do you have a team? Tell me about the business.
Yeah. So we do. So I have a lot of like back end support staff that does like underwriting and outreach for us and really just kind of supports us. I do basically the capital market side and, you know, and talk to borrowers about what they're looking for and then, you know, go find the capital. You know, as far as like growth, we've definitely seen like really healthy growth. Like before the pandemic, even 2020 wasn't that bad, to be honest with you. And then right now, I mean, the industry itself is just there's a lot of activity. You know, I mean, commercial, like what we do is we trade debt, right? And there, one thing that I think the economy is not lacking is debt, and a need to refinance it. So yeah, I mean, going forward, there's so much money out there right now. I think you're going to see asset prices go up significantly, and just like it did in 2009, right? Everybody thought everything was super expensive in 2009-10, and it turned out actually it was pretty cheap compared to what was about to happen. So, I mean, I think that's what's going to happen now, but just on an even larger scale.
Okay. Well, good. Good to know, I guess, you know, if you're investing. I mean, you've diversified. You have such a variety of types of commercial, you know, loans and all that you do that also helps, you know, no matter what's going to happen and what industries might not be doing well or whatever, you've got it covered. So yeah.
Right. So we because we're an intermediary, we have the ability to pivot pretty easily. Like for instance, in 2020, you know, a lot of like for instance, I wasn't doing any hotels, right? One thing that was very, very active and working was home builder financing. So we were never really active in that space, but we pivoted and built a program around financing suburban home construction, and we did a whole bunch of those deals. It's definitely, there's a little bit of like following trends in what we do, and kind of going after those, which doesn't hurt, right? To be able to pivot.
Yes, the fact that you are in home building lending is huge right now. So yeah, it's great. Fantastic for you. And so hopefully, and I don't see that slowing down at all. And I'm sure you don't either. And it's just...
No, lumber just needs to come down a little bit more.
A little bit. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I heard that lumber might come down, but then steel is going to go up. So, you know, that's not going to help at all anyway. And concrete. Yeah. Anyway, we'll see. We'll see what happens. But people are still going to need the housing. Yeah. And if not, then the multifamily is going to continue to do well because they're going to be living there instead. So or the storage because they're going to live with their parents.
Yep,
so, you know, it's all
or they're going to live in the storage one way or another.
It's all good for you. Yeah, yeah, definitely. All right. Well, Jake, is there anything else that you wanted to touch on that that we haven't?
Well, we touched on a lot.
We did. Yeah. Covered a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I would just say, you know, if any of the viewers are interested in commercial or have questions, like, I'm always around. I'm happy to chat with people. You know, you don't have to own 1,000 apartments. You know, I'm happy to try to, you know, help people out as much as possible. This is all I do, right? So I'm always around, so feel free to give me a shout anytime.
Excellent. Well, thank you. Thank you so much. And we will definitely put your contact information on the description and on all of our social media so people know a little bit about Clopton Capital and about you and how they can get in touch with you and all that and learn more about what you're all about. So thank you so much for your time. Thanks for sharing your knowledge. And I wish you the very best in the coming years. So yeah.
Life,
yeah.
Life.
Wonderful. And thank you everybody for listening. I hope you learned a lot. I know that I did. I always like to have guests on that really bring a wealth of different knowledge than what we typically have because it keeps it all interesting. So with that, thanks for listening and here's to next time. Thanks so much for listening today. If you like what you hear and want to learn more about real estate and hear the occasional funny story, then hit that subscribe button right now. And if you know of someone who'd benefit from listening, then tell them to subscribe too, or else they may feel a little left out. For questions, topic suggestions, or nice comments, send an email to anna@segwayre.com. We can also connect on Facebook at SegwayRE. Thanks for listening as we bring you a new way of doing real estate. Bye!